People of Note on Fine Music Radio is proudly brought to you each week at this time by Peter Turin Productions. This is Rodney Trudgeon welcoming you to this week's edition of People of Note here on Fine Music Radio. And as you've probably seen, Cape Town City Ballet recently announced its autumn and winter season to take place here at Artscape, and it's a combination of modern classics and popular favorites. There's a triple bill called Amaranth, and even the ever-popular Tchaikovsky ballet, The Sleeping Beauty. Now, my guest on People of Note this week is the recently appointed Chief Executive Officer of Cape Town City Ballet, Debbie Turner. Debbie is also the founding director of the Cape Dance Company, as well as the vocational dance school, the Cape Academy of Performing Arts. She's an active member of local and international dance communities and is regularly called on to offer her expertise in various capacities in that field. Debbie's also a well-known face as one of the judges for the inaugural 2018 season of Mnet's Dancing with the Stars SA. So, Debbie, a warm welcome to Fine Music Radio and to
Thank
People
Thank you very
Note.
Much. It's lovely to be here.
And I gather you're having a very busy time at the moment with your season just about to begin.
Yes, it is. Absolutely. We're about 11 days away now from the opening night of Amaranth, which is very exciting. It's very, very busy at Cape Town City Ballet with three different ballets being rehearsed, guest stages and choreographers in the building. So it's a crazy place at the moment, but it's a lovely crazy.
Well, you can relax for an hour with us here at FMR.
I certainly
now
can.
Sort of
I certainly can.
Tell me, just before I want to find all about you, Debbie, but before that, tell me a little bit about Amaranth, because that sort of intrigues me, this triple bill of various styles and things.
Right. Well, first of all, as the new CEO of Cape Town City Ballet, I'm a product of Cape Town dance. I grew up and was taught many styles of dance in the city. And I was very fortunate to grow up on what was at the time a huge amount of money spent on dance, on opera and music. And, you know, it was a big thrill when my mom used to bring me to the ballet. I was also taken to the opera, but, you know, I taken to the ballet and to listen to the sound of the instruments warming up in the orchestra pit and sort of, you know, hanging over with your mother holding onto your dress tails, you know, don't fall over, darling.
You mean down into the orchestra pit?
Yes, down into the orchestra pit. You know, that was a very, very exciting time. I also spent a short time of my life as a child in Durban, and of course the Playhouse Theatre used to do the same. So I grew up on what was exceptional and excellent in dance in South Africa. And I remember those times very, very fondly. And of course, as a result, with the withdrawal of state funding for dance and for performing arts, you know, that was slowly, slowly whittled away. And it was a case of making the best, you know, with what you have. And so when I took this position, I decided that I wanted to try my best to restore a little bit of what I grew up on as a child. And immediately the work of Georges Balanchine, you know, came to mind, because Cape Town City Ballet, or Cape Hab at the time, as well as Pact Ballet in Johannesburg, had many of Balanchine's works. And I will always remember Serenade, you know, I think I must have been about 17 or 18 when I saw the work and wanted to restore that. It's also still very, very popular in repertoires in companies internationally, particularly in the Northern Hemisphere. So I started the conversations with various people, you know, what would you like to see back on the stage for Cape Town City Ballet? And I really took what people had to say to heart. And Transfigured Night was one of the other things that was also, you know, brought up, and it's choreographed by, you know, Frank Stauffer, a very highly, you know, applauded South African-born choreographer. And knowing that he, you know, Frank's last wife, Veronica Paper, you know, lives in Cape Town and is right here in our midst, to use the incredible expertise that we have in South Africa in terms of dance knowledge and dance choreography. So I started the ball rolling with negotiating with the Balanchine Trust through various people that were able to give me the contacts, because it's been a long time since it was on the stage. I think it was 1985 that it was last performed. It was brought into the company in 1983, and there was obviously a license for the piece, for the work, and it was used during that time. So we had to send footage of Cape Town City Ballet to the Balanchine Trust to say, this is what the company looks like, you know, at the moment. It's somewhat reduced in size from the time, you know, when it was originally staged. And through the assistance of some very, very generous people in the dance world internationally, we were able to get this ballet back. But it's an expensive exercise.
I'm sure it is.
We pay for international works in foreign currency. Mm-hmm. You know, what seems like an outrageous amount of money to us is doesn't sound so bad when you quote it in dollars.
Yes.
But the fact is that if we want to have international quality of work back on our stages, where there is a tremendous investment that happens not only from Cape Town City Ballet for those works, but the people that come out to stage the works are also investing themselves in the dancers. They are academically learning about something that these young dancers haven't really been exposed to. So the investment is multifold. It's not just about buying the ballet. It's also about the inspiration of working with young dancers that are also possibly aspiring choreographers that are learning the dance language in a different way. They are learning the Balanchine style, which in itself is a trademark statement. You know, it carries a copyright. And so Rebecca Metzger, who is staging Serenade, was a dancer in New York City Ballet for many years. And, you know, work, you know, with in the Balanchine repertory, did almost everything in the Balanchine repertory that the New York City Ballet does and still continues to do. So she is sharing, and very generously so much of what she learned as a member of New York City Ballet, dancing the ballets of this great master that needs to be known about by and experienced by young South African dancers that are growing and learning about different styles. You know, there's so many different schoolings of classical ballet, and they're learning about the American style, which is predominantly Balanchine influenced.
Mm-hmm. I just want to, we are going to get to our first piece of music in a moment, so
yes.
I'm going to stop you for a second. Serenade, this is the one that's set to Tchaikovsky's Serenade for Music, is it?
Correct,
is it that one?
Yes.
And that's part, we've been talking about part of Amaranth now.
Correct, yes,
it's the
opening of Amaranth, yes.
Let's, Debbie, let's just take a break here, music-wise, because I'm intrigued to see what you've chosen, music-wise.
Yes.
And I see you've chosen something which was in its time quite shocking, the Rite of Spring.
Absolutely.
Why have you chosen that?
The music came to my attention as a young teacher, probably in my early 20s, and I didn't even really know what I was listening to. You know, I bought a couple of CDs thinking, let me take a listen. And I thought, gosh, this is really, really interesting. It sounds quite unsettling, this music. It's really holding my attention, as opposed to something that you would play as background music. And then obviously did some research on the work. I also did some research on it when I was a BMUS student at UCT in the early 90s, and tried my hand at a little bit of choreography to it as a young teacher, not obviously the whole score, but a section of it. And I think the reason why it stays so firmly in my head is that about 8 years ago, I was very fortunate to see a live performance of it at the Royal Albert Hall in London as a 90-piece orchestra. And, you know, so it was absolutely huge.
Yes.
And it was a wonderful thing to see, because it was a project that I think they do every 2 or 3 years at the Royal Albert Hall, where young musicians, I think that's under the age of 26, get to come to London to produce a performance. And all these young musicians were 26 and under, with the youngest, I think, was 12 in the orchestra. And I was fortunate that I was sitting in a box. Was an absolute treat for me, you know, absolute treat. And I all of a sudden saw music as dance in itself, because when you sit from above and watch an orchestra, you're watching the bows of the strings, you know, of the violinists, etc., moving up and down. And all of a sudden I was looking down at this magnificent sight and seeing that in actual fact the bows of the violins were actually dancing.
Yes, choreographed.
Choreographed, exactly. Yeah, and it actually just brought tears to my eyes. And I just thought, you know, I will never forget this experience that I'm having sitting that I'm sure will probably only happen once in my lifetime. And besides the fact that I find the music very stirring, very unsettling. A lot of people think I'm crazy that it's one of my favorite pieces of music.
It's a great piece.
But it is a magnificent piece of music. And you know, casting my mind back to 1913, I can only but imagine what people must have thought at that time, yeah. at that very, very famous premiere. And so, yes, that was one of my first choices.
Okay, let's have – well, it's long. It's 33 minutes or
yes.
So let's play at the opening, shall we, to
fantastic.
The first sort of energetic dance.
Yes, fantastic. Thank you.
Well, part of that fantastic score, The Rite of Spring by Stravinsky there. The first choice of my guest on People of Note this week, who is Debbie Turner, recently appointed Chief Executive Officer of Cape Town City Ballet. And Cape Town City Ballet's autumn and winter season is about to open, and we're talking about Amaranth, which is a triple bill. And you spoke in some detail, Debbie, about Serenade, which I said is Tchaikovsky's Serenade for Music, isn't it?
That's yes.
That's the score. But then there's Transfigured something. Tell me what else is on.
Frank Staff's Transfigured Night, which is to music by Schoenberg, is being staged by Veronica Paper, who was Frank Staff's last wife, his fourth wife,
yeah.
And each wife actually had a son to him. And Veronica, you know, I've had obviously interaction with Veronica over the years. And when I had, in my first week of being CEO, I was asking people here in this foyer in the auditorium when they were coming to see Cinderella, you know, what from the sort of historical repertory of Cape Town City Ballet, or KPAB rather, would you like to see back? And so many people brought up Transfigured Night and spoke about the various casts that they'd seen, that they'd seen Frank Staff, you know, in dance in his own work many, many years back. And it was something that I also studied when I was at university. And I'd been looking through the history books and obviously, you know, looking for how I was going to curate this new part of my life and this new part of Cape Town City Ballet. And I had a chat with Veronica about it. And Veronica said, well, you know, it's very gloomy and, you know, and quite dark. And I said, well, you know what? It's going to be sandwiched between two very upbeat or light things. So why not? You know, it's a timeless story of a family tragedy, actually. A cast of only four, two men and two women, a younger sister, an older sister, a brother and a lover. And I just thought, well, you know, this also stretches the dancers into a space of requiring dramatic, really strong dramatic performances within dance, which is, I believe, to be very, very important. You know, a lot of new choreography that's made today is dance and music together for dance and music's sake, not necessarily with a narrative. So I felt that it was important to include a narrative in the triple bill, and this most certainly is a narrative. Veronica speaks about how Frank actually, it's based on a true life story, and Frank actually in the southern states of America met these two sisters at a point in time, I can't remember the exact year, and I think had afternoon tea with them and chatted with them about their story. And at the time, their brother, who is in the story, was actually in an asylum. And Frank then decided to create a ballet around this. And the way Veronica speaks about how he chose the music was that just one day he just came out, you know, with this, I found the perfect music, you know, yeah. And it was yeah. It was Schoenberg. And
it's for Clechtonat.
Yes, 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 exactly. Yes, exactly. And so Veronica and the dancers have had a wonderful time learning this old work, or this work from many, many years ago that is still so relevant today. The family story repeats itself.
Yes.
And so Veronica's actually got four casts because she was so impressed with what the dancers brought of themselves. And, you know, she still actually just yesterday finalized the decisions about the permutations of the casts and, you know, who works best with whom. So that I'm really, really looking forward to. The wonderful thing as well is that Peter Casley has redesigned the cloths.
Oh, yes.
Which is wonderful to have, you know, somebody of his stature
yes.
back working with us. You know, this man that has, it feels like he styled, costumed and designed almost every production that went up in this building, particularly, and also internationally during the 70s and 80s. And so I felt very honored that he agreed to come back and to do this for us. So the cloths are ready to be hung. And so we, you know, that forms the middle part of the program. And then, of course, the last ballet in the program is by Christopher L. Huggins, an American choreographer, staging his Enemy Behind the Gates. And I have staged before on the Cape Dance Company, which is now gone to sleep, so to speak.
Yes, because of your move.
Yeah, because of my move, and also because many of the dancers, you know, did their audition through Cape Town City Ballet and have been taken into the body of Cape Town City Ballet, which is wonderful for dancers to have permanent, you know, employment
course,
in this very, very difficult time for performing arts. And so some of them have actually performed the work before. The exciting part is that when Christopher originally staged the work in 2010 for me, it was done in its original form to support 16 dancers. And I then decided that for the Cape Dance Company's 21st anniversary, we would double the cast. It would be very, very exciting if we made it bigger. And eventually it's landed up as 60 dancers strong. 60 dancers, some of which are tertiary students in their final months of study. And, you know, there is an importance for tertiary students to have professional experience. So they are getting this wonderful time of working with a professional ballet company. Christopher is present at the moment with his repetiteur and is working with all these bodies, which he actually hasn't worked with before. And, you know, he said to me, "Are you crazy?" You know, but there's also a wonderful trend worldwide at the moment to create works or to make works with large casts to fill these large stages. You know, English National Ballet is doing it with Cinderella on the Royal Albert Hall stage at the moment. Gosh. So, you know, it's a very, very exciting to see things sort of magnified.
But
so
also
to speak.
For the dancers, I would have thought, working with someone like Christopher on a piece like this, these young dancers, you said, it must be an incredible experience for them.
Yes, yes, it is. Absolutely. And, you know, this work is obviously a more modern work, you know, though its technical base is in classical ballet. You wouldn't, if you're not classically trained, you wouldn't really be able to dance it. Christopher is actually a product of the Elvin Ailey American Dance Theatre. That was where he spent most of his professional life as a performer, but has been an independent artist internationally as a choreographer and teacher for a very, very long time. And this work is more part of the modern repertory. It's 21st century dance and what 21st century dance new creations really look like.
And what music is used with
it's
that,
Steve
Debbie?
Reich.
Oh, right, okay.
Yes, which is really, really exciting. It's a shorter ballet, it's 16 minutes, so, you know, it's not like the triple bill fits into about 2 hours, with intervals. And it really is bite-sized chunks of different periods of dance and different types of dance. Ballet companies are so diverse today.
They have to be,
absolutely. Mm. You know, dance has to appeal to the broadest possible element of the population. And yes, we, in August, we are doing Sleeping Beauty, which, of course, is part of our tradition and something that we absolutely will continue to do. But we also have to be doing 21st century dance. Balanchine, you know, the work was created in the 20th century, but the work that is going up at the moment worldwide is just so, so diverse. And ballet companies are landing up with contemporary choreographers that almost have no classical background at all, but have an exquisite experience of movement in the more contemporary space. And those contemporary choreographers working with highly skilled, high performance athletes, which is what classical ballet dancers are.
Yeah.
They are having this sort of smorgasbord of they can do anything, yes, one has to have a training in contemporary techniques, but the absolute base of dance comes from classical ballet. Yeah. Although some people would shoot me down, we all acknowledge that is where you get the highest quality of the art form. But then they need to be introduced to more modern languages of dance.
For their benefit, for the benefit of the audience, for the benefit of the growth of both the audience and the company.
Yes, absolutely.
Meanwhile, still having the Sleeping Beauties and Swan Lakes and
absolutely.
So on. Absolutely. Debbie, let's take another pause and some music, and I see Elton John lurking here.
Yes.
Tell me the reason you've put this into your mix.
Well, that particular piece of music I chose, A New York State of Mind, is something that, again, as a young choreographer, I worked with as a piece of music. It was shortly after I had visited New York for the very, very first time in my late 20s. I couldn't afford to travel before then. Overseas travel, as we all know, is expensive, but how much it enriches you and how that very, very first moment of standing in Times Square, this is what people have been telling me about for so long. And I think that Elton John's rendition of New York State of Mind absolutely encapsulates what New York City does to a person's heart.
I wasn't doing this song, which is one of my favorite songs he's ever written, so lucky on me. This one's called New York State of Mind.
Yeah.
Elton John, that was the live recording of New York State of Mind. And it was the second choice of my guest on this week's edition of People of Note here on Fine Music Radio, Debbie Turner, who's the Chief Executive Officer of Cape Town City Ballet. I just wanted to ask you, Debbie, I want to talk a little bit about you now. When you were offered this job, because as I said, you were the founding director of the Cape Dance Company, which was established in 1995, the Vocational Dance School there, Cape Academy of Performing Arts, also 1985, How did you feel about coming to what theoretically is a kind of a classical ballet company?
Well, like every little girl, I started my life in ballet at the age of three. My sister was a ballet teacher. So, and in those days, it was perfectly acceptable and permitted to have your ballet studio in your triple garage that was in the back of your home. So, I mean, you know, many people of my age will have grown up on situations like that, and it's still prevalent today. So I had a ballet studio in my backyard. I trained in classical ballet up until the age of 21, but also I was fortunate that I was exposed to a number of other dance forms that was part and parcel of the ballet studio.
So because I read somewhere that you were quite a Spanish dancer expert.
So at the age of seven, I started Spanish dance because, you know, my ballet teacher in Durban at the time, Joy Shearer, that was what she taught. She taught ballet and she taught Spanish. And, you know, already I was a regular at the dance studio, as was my sister at the time. And it was, well, you know, what is the next step? She wants to do more. So my mother put me into Spanish dance. And right up until the age of 13, that was all that I did, classical ballet and Spanish dance. I was a student of the University of Cape Town when I was that age. And Dame Mavis Becker was my Spanish dance teacher as a child. And in fact, right up until the professional level. And then with much nagging at the age of 13, I wanted to do contemporary dance. It was what everybody was doing.
Yeah.
So then my mother said, well, you're not giving up ballet. And you're not giving up Spanish, so you can add it to your string of things that you do, your recreational stuff. And so it was then ballet, Spanish, and contemporary or modern dance, as it was known in South Africa at the time.
Yeah.
And that was with Diane Fincham, who, you know, is still active in dance today. And then I did a smattering of tap dance here and there, still carrying everything else. And then at 17, I became a Latin American dancer.
Good grief.
So
baby.
I was right through my matric, you know, I was doing all those forms of dance. There was an opportunity offered to me, you know, with Mavis once I'd finished all my Spanish dance exams that, you know, she had a company. She had a company that worked from 5 till 10 at night because nobody could afford to live on the salary that a dancer was paid in those days. And so in the beginning of my life, after school, I went to university for 6 months, absolutely hated every minute of it, and pulled a bit of a fast one on my father. And I left after 6 months, and he said to me, my girl, don't think that you're going to sleep until lunchtime every day and then dance the night away, so to speak. So he said, you need to get a job. And by the time he came home at the end of that day, I had a job at Barclays Bank through a friend of mine in the dance environment. So I worked in Barclays Bank for 3.5 years, traveling with Mavis. We traveled overseas. We traveled to Austria. We traveled to Spain. We traveled all over. And eventually, I'd had enough of the bank. And my dad said, well, you know, why don't you open a dance school? And I didn't have to have that offered to me twice. And so at 21, I started my own business and continued to dance professionally with Mavis until the age of 33. And it was a case of, well, not having a great big master plan, but a case of, well, what do I do next to be better?
Yes.
I always wanted to be better. And I think also the concurrent development of my school alongside my professional dance career really helped me to have a big picture, so to speak, of what it needs to look like at the professional level and what it looks like when they're 7 and 8 years of age.
Is this the dance school that I mentioned? The
Cape Academy of Performing Arts. And it still absolutely is a part and parcel of my life at this stage, but I no longer have recreational students in the school. They are only vocational students that have already chosen dance as what they want to do with the rest of their life. Mm-hmm. So they are trained for the profession over in a 3-year tertiary program.
So as CEO of Cape Town City Ballet, you're still able to keep these other little irons in the fire, so to speak.
Yes, absolutely. The Cape Dance Company has gone to sleep. I think it has run its course. It was around for 24 years. I did everything with it that I wanted to do with it, and now there's no need for there to be two companies when there can be a really, really open approach to the repertory at Cape Town City Ballet that addresses all tastes of dance with a very strong focus on
classical
ballet.
Because as you said earlier, Debbie, a number of those people have come to Cape Town City Ballet.
Yes,
to swell the
absolutely.
Ranks of Cape
yes.
Town City Ballet.
We held an audition for the first time in people's memory. Cape Town City Ballet had an audition in late October. And, you know, the thinking around that is that Cape Town City Ballet needs to have an open door. It needs to be welcoming to the whole dance community, and it needs to be a leader in the province, and it most certainly needs to be a leader in the city. We partially benefit from City of Cape Town funding and Western Cape government funding, which is basically taxpayers' money, and we need to do our bit for the dance community to help them, to guide them, to welcome them into the space, and to feel that everybody is addressed and cared for in all genres of dance, not just look after the classical ballet side of things, because it can't just be that anymore.
Well, it's interesting to hear you say that. It's also reassuring, Debbie, because some people, you know, a new broom sweeps clean, and coming from a sort of contemporary background, people might have thought, gosh, does that mean we're not going to have the Sleeping Beauties anymore? But as you said, it's important to keep those in, but it's as important to get the new stuff up.
Absolutely. There needs to be. I've explained to the dancers that what Cape Town City Ballet will be doing going forward is, if you think of opening up a fan, which of course immediately goes back to my Spanish dance days.
Yes.
You open up a fan and it has a number of spines.
Yes.
And those spines are all the different parts of the repertory of Cape Town City Ballet. We will always, I give you my word, we will always do Giselle, Swan Lake, Sleeping Beauty, Nutcracker, and other traditional classics. But what we need to do is we need to reinvigorate those things, because the sets and costumes, some of them date back to 1975, and they don't look so good anymore. So they have to be rehabilitated, so to speak.
Yes.
Hence me getting Peter Casley back. He's coming to re-look at the Sleeping Beauty sets. He's redesigned some of the costumes, because it's necessary. You have to keep something current. Mm-hmm. You know, even in presenting the traditional classics, a lot of people are using audiovisual to enhance, you know, what used to be, you know, a crazy change of sets, you know, every 20 minutes, every act, in the middle of an act. So we have to move with the times.
I agree.
We have to move with the times.
And also exciting for the dancers and for the audience, isn't it?
Yes, absolutely.
Let's have another piece of music. Anita Baker.
Yes.
Tell me why you've chosen Anita Baker.
Rapture. Oh, it's a little bit. There's a little bit of a romantic history behind this. I think this is my husband and my favorite song. Sorry to sound a bit corny.
Not at all.
But also, Anita Baker just happened to be playing in his car when we started dating, and it was a cassette tape on top
oh,
of
yes.
that.
Good.
But also this beautiful, rich, melodic voice of hers, and I love it when the lyrics to a song tell a story. And so Anita Baker, Rapture, caught up in the rapture of love.
My love flies.
Anita Baker, that song called Rapture. Romantic story and a romantic reason, as you heard, why Debbie Turner, my guest, has chosen that. Debbie is the Chief Executive Officer of Cape Town City Ballet. You know, Debbie, we've been talking about Amaranth, the Triple Bill. We've been talking about all your plans, revitalizing the company and so on, getting many more new dancers in. But there is the business side, isn't there? The money. You've got to have bums on seats, as they say. You've got to sell tickets. I mean, that must be a challenge for you.
It is. The performing arts has to be a business. Yes, it will always be about the exquisiteness of the art form, be it music, be it opera, be it dance. But the reality of the world is that governments cannot afford to fully sustain any performing arts company in its entirety, which pretty much under the, you know, the KPAB banner, it was. That was why the huge, big, lavish productions could happen. Now, first of all, the government has other priorities, even though they do continue to support us, which we are very, very grateful for. But I also believe that there's some kind of responsibility that we as a ballet company have to take for engaging people with wanting to buy seats for our seasons. Yes, we are expanding the repertory at great expense, and that comes with higher ticket prices. But that is the reality of it. A supermarket cannot sell milk at 5 rand a litre when it costs 11 rand a litre to put milk on the shelf. In fact, it probably costs a bit more.
Yes.
But nevertheless, I want to give value for money, but how much do we value the art form? That's what's important. I hold dance in the very highest esteem, and so I value it very highly. When one travels internationally, you're paying upwards of £150 for a ticket to go and see dance in England. But then they're earning money in pounds. We are paying for choreography in pounds and dollars, but earning in rands. That's the biggest challenge for us. I'm trying to turn coming to the ballet into an experience rather than just coming to a performance. I want the dancers to engage with their public more. I want them to understand more about what the life of a dancer is. And a dancer deserves to earn a decent living. I don't want to say that they're not earning a decent living at the moment, but they should be earning a whole lot better. I want to put my money where my mouth is, bring great art back to the stages, and that costs money. But the ticket prices are between 150 rand and 495 rand for Amaranth. So there's a broad availability of seats.
Okay. And it is important. I mean, we always say how our youngsters pay vast sums of money to go and see acts from overseas.
Yes.
But as with the orchestra here, they've got to put ticket prices up. We're very lucky that the prices are, in fact, as low as they are, aren't we?
Yes, absolutely.
Because of what we're seeing, the standards of what we're seeing on the stage with the opera, with the orchestra, and with the ballet.
Yes.
But just before I let you go, because time is raced by Debbie.
Yes.
And it's been really quite exhilarating talking to you about your plans and your incredible enthusiasm. But the other ballet we must talk about just briefly is one of the great traditional ballets, The Sleeping Beauty.
Yes.
Because that's due in August, isn't it?
Yes, 17th of August is the opening night.
Okay. And what can we expect from that?
Well, the wonderful thing is that we have got the production being redesigned redesigned to a degree. Spruced up by Peter Casley. It's being produced by Denise Schultz-Godfrey, who's, her name precedes her in terms of, she was a leader of Pact Ballet Company many, many years ago with her husband, Louis Godfrey. So we're very excited to have that expertise on our floor as well. But the guest artists, there are two guest artists from the Royal Ballet for the final week of the performances, Vadim Montegirov and Sarah Lamb. But I'm equally proud to be presenting two of South Africa's born and bred dancers that are now working internationally, Sipe November, who's with the National Ballet of Canada, Andile Ndlovu, who is with the Washington Ballet, and then, of course, Precious Adams, who is an American-born dancer, trained in Russia for the last few years of her training and now working with English National Ballet. So we have some very, very exciting guest artists. This inspires me. This inspires the dancers. This inspires the teachers. It inspires the choreographers. It's an inspiration for everybody.
And in turn, inspires the audience.
Yes, inspires the audience. And it's the beginning of an international exchange that I really, really hope to keep up.
Gosh, you are terribly positive and exhilarating to listen to, Debbie. So this
Thank
is
you.
Good because, and the passion that you have for dance comes through as well.
Mm.
You're sitting there glowing because you're talking about dance.
Yes, it is pretty much my life.
Well, thank you for chatting to us.
Thank
and
you.
All the best. Strength to your arm or whatever you say to a ballet yes. dancer. Not break a leg.
Please no, please no.
But Debbie, what then will your last piece of music be?
It will be the meditation from Thais Massenet.
And a reason for choosing this?
Again, I'm going to get romantic again. It was my wedding music.
Oh,
yes.
Okay.
But also very, and I had it played live in the church. So it's a very emotive piece of music for me. It's sad, it's happy, it's magnificent.
Okay. Debbie Turner was my guest. Debbie is the CEO of Cape Town City Ballet. As you heard, Amaranth opens on the 22nd of June. It's a triple bill. We've told you all about it. So go along and support Cape Town City Ballet. We need the ballet company in town, don't we? Thank you, Debbie, very much.
Thank you, Rodney.
Thank you. People of Note on Fine Music Radio was proudly brought to you by Peter Turin Productions. Escape the cold this winter with some fiery Italian passion as Peter Turin presents Family Secrets at Theatre on the Bay. Directed by Alan Swerdlow, Family Secrets is a sincere and entertaining story of a mother and son who face secrets which will change their lives forever. That's Family Secrets, starring Dorothy Ann Gould and Sven Rygrock, from the 3rd to the 13th of July, only at Theatre on the Bay. Book now.